Now, I suppose, okay, now, so, over the week, we read the original Turtles trading manual, presumably. So this is true? I'm trying to tape this for our absent members. Naturally. Naturally, it comes up with some absurd. Hey!
Hey!
How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
You?
Well, we're just, we read the original Turtles. Trading manual. Uh-huh. And last week I passed out the divider pages or the table of contents pages for the systems manual that I presume that which should be your aim to create during this course. And I talked a little bit about that, and I'm going to talk about it some more, but I would like to get reactions to the original Turtles manual. Coppers up, is there anybody here who didn't read it? Or, I mean,
I read it in your book.
Okay. Yeah, right. You could get it off the web or you could get it out of the book. Let me say this about that, which is that I have in my files a number of manuals, trading manuals like the original Turtles manual. Most of them are not so beautiful, and in general they're marked up and dog-eared, but I have been associated with a number of prominent, well-known, and not so well-known, but very good traders, and have their trading manuals, and these trading manuals are all bear some resemblance, or certainly have common denominators with the original Turtles book that you read. And in fact, before I ever became aware of the original Turtles manual on the web, I was handing out the pages that you see here, the table of contents pages, as I describe them. Now, it would probably be a good idea for you to get a three-ring binder and a three-hole punch and put these things in it. And as we proceed through the course, you'll be making the contents of this. So, what I learned, generally, well, I've never handed out the trading manuals of my partners and ex-partners because that would be a violation of confidentiality. But, so I've never actually handed one of those up, but the Turtles manual is one of the most finely articulated trading manuals that I've seen. As I say, all of the manuals that I have bear a resemblance to the Turtle manual, but very few of them are so polished and finely presented. And generally, let's say, there are some elements that you have to cover in your own trading if you're a trader, that are not too finely covered in the Turtle manual. But maybe I could get a show of hands as to who's an investor and who's a trader. Investors? There's an investor. Two, three, four, five. Are you a trader? Or?
No, I'm just a paper trader.
You're what?
I'm just a paper trader. Paper trading.
Paper trading. Well, but the question is how you define yourself. Do you define yourself as a...
Depends on when.
Hmm?
Depends on when.
Well, there's an old market saw that investors or traders who are locked in by the market, by which the intent or the what the that old market saw wants to say is that you trade and then suddenly you discover that you were long something and you didn't get out, and so now you have a losing position, so you're an investor in it. So are you a trader? I mean, so everybody here has identified himself as an investor. Brett, what's the difference between an investor and a trader?
My opinion, an investor is in for the long haul, basically. On a personal side, I'm more of an investor, but my work, I'm more of a trader. That's what I do. But I would like to move from an investor to trader on the personal side as well.
How long is the long haul?
Typically, pretty long. In other words, just throw money into the IRA account and let that ride for the most part. You selectively at times moving in and out of different options, but options within the IRA, but outside of that, not too much movement.
So potentially years?
Yes.
So you could have a position that would last for years?
Yes.
Okay. David, how long is long term for you?
Pretty much in the same boat. And I do want to start trading.
Okay. Stephen?
Well, right now I consider myself an investor, but I'd like to become a trader.
Everybody's looking for trouble.
I'm moving in the other direction.
My wife, every
confidence
time,
too.
Yeah, every time my wife gets the statement and says, look how much money we lost on this thing. That's my incentive to
Well, you know, I keep hearing the one of the Motley Fools, I don't know which one, I can't tell them apart, on KQED, National Public Radio, and I hear them say the damnedest things. I mean, you know, I hear them say things, and you know, then I see all this spam that they send out that says, you know, our record is 546% while the Dow is up 12% or whatever. And I'm wondering, well, these things they're saying, they must have had very small amounts of their portfolio in them, because when Enron went down the tubes, one of the fools was on NPR and said that he had held it all the way to the bottom. And I thought, yeah, there's a fool. And then just the other day, one of the fools said that he had invested it. He made a really good buy, invested in Amazon at 6, and or 3 or 4, or the number's not really important. He invested in 3 or 4 or 5, and Amazon went to 94, and then it went to 9. And he's still in it. He's still in it. And he said proves the validity of my method. Now it's back up to 60. And so I'm thinking about sending him a note and saying, hey, you know, how would you like to improve your performance? So here's this guy who's, you can't be more long-term than that, can you? But is he going to hold the thing if it goes back to 5? Probably, based on his performance in Enron. So long-term is, let me talk a little bit about what long-term and short-term, since everybody wants real trouble. I've been on tick by tick trading and I've had stocks that I've held for years. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years. And in point of fact, trader or investor, you should have been long the indexes for about 9 or 10 years during the 90s. There should never have been a sale in there, in point of fact. Trader or investor. And also there's, I think there's a good argument for being both. If you're only going to be one, then you should be an investor. Because unless you're dumb, you really should not lose money investing. Okay? Unless you're dumb or you don't have a methodology. Or let's say, for dumb, you could also say uneducated or uninformed or unenlightened. I'd like to think that anybody who's passed through this course is no longer dumb or uninformed or unenlightened. And in fact, there's a famous story I like to tell about the Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh, who was giving a course at Spirit Rock, where I live in San Geronimo. And they did the first couple of hours, they were sitting in the lotus position or standing on their heads or doing things. And Thich Nhat Hanh said, how many of you are uncomfortable and would prefer not to be here? And all kinds of hands went up. And he said, too late. And it's too late for you. Because when you stepped into this class, you set your feet on a path towards being informed and being enlightened by the premier educators of the craft. You cannot pass through the Edwards and McGee book and come out uninformed. So, trader or investor, you should be a little of each. For certain, an investor. And for certain, an investor armed with this technology or with technical analysis should, over the long term, never see extensive losses, and in fact should do better than, much better than the average investor, and better even than competent investors. The reason for that is that once you have learned to analyze trends, recognize, analyze, and take action on trends, you should never be long a losing stock again. You should never, the greatest of capital sins is to let a loss run. And if you only learn one thing in this course, it will be how not to let a loss run. And it will be how to manage stops in general. So this is really pretty simple over the long term. Okay? If you just, I was talking to Chris earlier, if you just trade the indexes, if you just trade the indexes and you're only long when they're going up, and you get out when the trend changes, by definition, you're going to be a passive indexer. Is this a theorem which you can accept? Yes?
What do you mean by passive indexer?
Well, the passive indexer is the great, you know, from the time of Wells Fargo Investment Advisors, the passive indexers just got long the Dow and stayed long whether it went up or down. Over the long term, of course, they were profitable. Right?
Right.
So right.
More of a, not less of a stock picker.
What?
Not a stock picker.
No. Passive indexing, the passive indexers, you know, the index funds are the funds where you just chunk money into them and they buy that many shares of the diamonds are back in the old days, but prior to that, they bought a basket of stocks, okay, which matched the Dow, which tracked the Dow. Okay, so the market goes up, they make money. Market goes down, they lose money. That's not a good way to invest. The best way to invest is to buy it when it goes up, just stay long, and when this trend changes, get out and either go short or get out. Now, if you look at chapter 5 of the book, you'll see that the record of the Dow theory. So let's say, in general, when technicians and I talk about long-term investors, we're talking about Dow theory investors. And I used to say, you know, the Dow theory is like Mark Twain said about the weather. You know, everybody talks about the weather, but nobody does anything about it. You know, well, everybody talks about Dow theory, and nobody does anything about it. So I finally decided to do something about it. And I did it in Chapter 5 and Chapter 5.1. And what I did was, I showed a couple of things. One thing, I showed the power of the Dow theory. And the power of the Dow theory to, let's say, get you in and out of the market, okay, get you in the market long when the market was going up, get you out of the market when the market tanked. Okay, and the Dow theory has done that very effectively any number of times. When I say nobody ever did anything about the Dow theory, I mean, if you look at the dumb statistics that I ran on the Dow theory, you'll see how long trades lasted, how long, and then you'll see what the relative power of being short when the Dow was out You can also see what the risk characteristics of the Dow are, because you can see, I think, at the point that I computed it, the Dow, if you had just been on the long side of the Dow theory and been out when the Dow was out, you would have been out something in the neighborhood of 30, about a third of the time, which means you're in a risk-free position. Well, not only are you in a risk-free position, but people who are passive indexers are getting their brains hammered out, okay? Because the market's tanking in 1929 or 2000, 2001 to 2003. Those are all segments of the market where, what do I want to be long for? Do I enjoy losing money? No. Well, if I'm a long-term investor like the mock turtles, or I'm mocking the turtles, I mean, you get made into turtle soup. So on a long-term investing basis, you could see what just a simple Dow theory investor would have done. And it's a relatively objective method, and it still works. I mean, the Dow theory right now is long and has been long since after the Kilroy bottom or the Head and Shoulders bottom was formed in 2003. So when I say that a long-term investor ought to beat the market and ought to competently make money over a long period of time, there is a method which is demonstrated, which is demonstrable, which is a public transparent record that shows you that a technician can make money in the market. Now, when Edwards and McGee wrote their book, their intention was, and in fact, Edwards says specifically, that the purpose of the book is for investors are, McGee called them speculators. He said that he was a midterm speculator. Well, he meant by that he was investing on a time frame that was shorter than the Dow theory, okay? I mean, a midterm speculator today is a guy who's in for 4 days, they wrote their book with the intention of showing and proved that you can make money on shorter trends than Dow theory trends, okay? Now, some practitioners of Dow theory would say that these are trading on secondaries. Okay, the Dow theory, and if you're not familiar with the Dow theory, then you should read the first couple of chapters of the book, Robert Edwards. And there, just to guide you a little bit on that, there is a very long section where Edwards dissected the Dow theory point by point, and you probably don't really need to read that. But if you're not familiar with Dow theory, you should read that, and you should let me know. Basically, I talked to you last week. I was peppered with so many questions from the beginning of the class that I didn't get to do all the things I wanted to do. But Dow theory is that theory where you have the waves coming into the beach and you drive a stake and a wave comes in and the next wave higher and you put a stake there and next wave is higher and you put a stake there, and when you begin to get down waves that are at lower levels than these down waves, now you've begun doing that, and that is as simple as it may be, that is the way the market works. Okay? And since the market is fractal, it is self-similar at all scales, i.e., when you look at this pattern, you don't know, unless you have a time frame specified on it, you don't know whether you're looking at multi-year or multi-minute. You find these exact same patterns looking at tick-by-tick data. Absolutely. Now, let me make a point. If I ever use a term or say something you don't understand or leave you confused, just raise a hand. Okay? Don't sit in confusion. Just raise a hand. If you don't know what a fractal is, raise your hand. So this, the power of this method is literally incredible. Okay, now there are a couple of things that happen in this method. The things that happen in this method are if you just take these points. This is basically, the Dow is basically a wave analysis. If you take this and do this, you solve the problem of when to sell. There are other ways to look at it. You can also draw a trend line and you have an earlier warning of when to get out. Okay? There's even another way you could look at it, which you could say that, okay, this is a trend analysis, the line. This is a wave analysis, the points. This is a supportive resistance analysis. When you get a line here, you say, okay, now there ought to be support in here for this price. So if it goes below that by 3%, or McGee used 3% a lot, if it goes below that by 3%, then I'm going to liquidate my position. So once you know how to analyze a trend, to recognize a trend, to follow a trend, and how to set stops in it, if you lose money, there's something the matter. You should call me immediately. And I'll straighten you out. Now, how many of you have done trend analysis? I know a number of you have taken the courses. Okay, you've done some trend analysis. So most of you had something to do with trends, right? I was favorably impressed by the analysis by all of the charts that you did on the analysis that we did last week, and I think that they're very, very good start. But I have been told any number of times by people who have come out of the other courses that they've never really analyzed trends, that they've never talked that much about trends. But in point of fact, there's only one way to make money in the market, and that's on a trend. You buy low, you sell high. It was a trend. Okay. So, what's astounding, as in the case of the Motley Fool, who holds Enron until it's worthless, is he doesn't know how to analyze a trend, and he proves it He proves it with his investment in Amazon. He doesn't know how to analyze a trend. Because if you know how to analyze a trend, you would never, well, first of all, you would never have taken the dive on Enron. And second of all, in Amazon, you would have made two or three trades, not one. Okay? And you would have never, after you had a profit, he had an 88 point profit in Amazon, and he let it escape. You know, there's something the matter with your head. I mean, you know, how long term are you? Well, here's how long term you should be. You should be long term until the trend reverses. Okay? Now, so if you're looking at tick by tick data, look at real time data. Maybe you're along till there are 5 minute trends, there are 10 minute trends, there are 15 minute trends, there are hourly trends. So as long as the trend is going up on the minute bar, you're long for 5 minutes or for 3 minutes or four or whatever. Okay. If you're looking at daily data, I mean, well, I've got to check this. The Dow is looking at daily data, in point of fact. And I know that weekly data, I ran a weekly data analysis of the NDX, and it was... you were long for 9 or 10 years. I'll find that chart here in a minute. One of the primary methods I'm going to teach you, well, we're going to look at all these things. I mean, there's another way to look at this. You can look at this. If you looked at this and said, well, my technical analysis is, I talk about natural and unnatural systems. And I'm actually joking a little bit. When I talk about unnatural systems, I'm not talking about guys that go to Thailand for child prostitutes. What I'm talking about is natural systems look directly at the data. Okay? So a charting system is a natural system. The Dow theory is pretty much a natural system. Wave analysis is a natural system. Unnatural systems. When I talk about unnatural systems, I mean systems which filter the data through an algorithm, through a mathematical or statistical routine. Unnatural systems, statistical or mathematico-statistical systems, are all blind. Okay? They're blind as a bat. It doesn't mean they don't work. What it means is they can't see when they're falling into a trap. But if you look at a chart, you can see when a mathematical system is falling into a trap. For example, you could take the moving average system here. And you'd make out like a bandit in a trend market. Just a stupid moving average system. I mean, you can put some constraints on it. You could say that the moving average is going to be broken by so much, or moving average is going to be so long or so short. Here's a moving average, and here's another moving average that crosses it, and you get out when this one crosses that one. Once you learn the content of this course and the content of the of chart analysis as Edwards and McGee developed it, you will be capable of judging, of evaluating any system in the world. Any system. Because you'll look at it and you'll say, I mean, you may not want to practice chart analysis. Chart analysis may be too qualitative for you. You may want something more quantitative. But you will not be able to look. When you take a system and you post its trades on the chart and look at the chart with the eyes of a McGee analyst, you will say, that's a stupid system. Because, I mean, like, here, this moving average did great, just like the Dow Theory did. Problem is, Dow Theory got out here, and this moving average, being deaf, dumb, blind, and stupid, did this. Bought this, sold it here, went short, closed the short here, went long, closed the long here, went short, closed the short here, went long. Any of you ever traded a moving average system? Well, they get cut to hamburger meat in sideways markets. They're fatal. Okay. So I have said to previous classes and everywhere else that once you know how to analyze a trend, once you know how to analyze the market, there's no excuse for this. That even if you're running a moving average system, when you see the markets move into a different phase, which they always do, you turn that system off and you start trading a trading system. Now, instead of trades that last for months or years, you determine the rhythm of the market and you buy weakness and sell strength. Now, if you go back into my archive and look at my letters from 1999 to 2001, that's when the terrorists got us, right? 9/11, 2001. Yeah. Well, you go back and look at that, and you'll see. Look at the Dow, and and you'll see, I'm not going to try to find it right now, but look at my letters, and you'll see that I identified the top, and I said that you should lighten up or be hedged, and then as it moved sideways, I said, okay, sell it here, buy it here, sell it here, buy it here, 4 or 5 times. And then on September the 11th, well, I said to be short. I was short here, and usually I covered my shorts here at the bottom of the range. And this time I said, before it occurred, I said, no, let's leave this short on. The reason I left the short on was because when the Dow came up, it didn't come back. It was weak. Okay. So the wave was weak, and I said, aha, this one could break away. And it did break away. It's not because I'm a genius. It's just because I've been looking at charts for 40 years. But the good news is, you don't have to look at them for 40 years. you look at them a year, look at them a couple of years. First thing you know, they start speaking to you. And you say, this is a mule market. I got fine, just for fun, I call a sideways market a mule market. Bull markets, bear markets, and mule markets. You say, this is a new market. And if you look at it, you know, the moving average would be doing just like that. So they're trending markets, and they're trading markets. And if you try to trade, try to use a trend market technique in a trading market, you'll be sliced and hammered. Okay? And if you try to use a trading method in a trending market, you'll see the oversold signal and then the overbought signal, and then you'll see it get more overbought and then more overbought and then more overbought until you're broke. Okay? Because you misunderstood the market. So there are a very great number of principles and practices and methods and techniques that are usable on widely differing time frames. That is, you can use them to trade or you can use them to invest. And probably the basic differences are in the instruments that you choose to do that in, and in the time frames that you adopt. Regardless of the time frame, your analysis, if it's a complete technical approach, will have a method of determining when the trend has changed. And we're going to study that pretty thoroughly here. I'd like to have a little more feedback about the Turtle Manual. I mean, the Turtle Manual is very, very elegant. I mean, not just the presentation and everything. The Turtle Manual takes an old Donchian system. See, I guess it was it called the 40-day breakout? The 4-week, yeah, it was 4-week breakout. The Turtle Manual takes an old system that was put together by Donchian back in, the 70s, which he took the market and he said, when you have a breakout, a close above a four week high, then you get long. When you break below the four week low, you sell your long and get short. Now the turtles massaged the process a little bit. But basically, you can see how if you were in a bull market, since markets take turns trading and trending and consolidating, you're going to have these patterns. You buy the breakout of the 4-week high. And it's a bull market, guess what happens? You get long. It goes up and it goes up and it goes up. And you're long all the time. You're long until you break the 4-week low. Pretty simple, pretty stupid, and extremely effective in a bull market. Now, okay, so back in the 70s, we made a huge amount of money in futures and commodities trading moving average systems. Later, let's see, I guess the Turtles were, the Turtles were in the 80s. In the 80s, the Turtles made a lot of money trading this turtle system. Well, what happened to the Turtles? And there's a valuable lesson there, which is, the markets are an intelligent antagonist. The markets, when the markets see somebody taking away too much of the money, they will adapt to keep that from happening. Now, sometimes they adapt literally on a personal level, meaning that the market participants, the locals, the brokers, the specialists, the market makers, figure out what you're doing and set traps for you. So the markets adapted to defeat the turtles. And the turtles went through some very bad times after going through some very good times. And what happened to us? We were the first licensed commodity advisors in California. We made huge amounts of money. We made averaged 119% for 5 or 6 or 7 years. What happened to us? Markets caught up with us. In fact, I suspected that I had a client in Chicago who gave us money to manage so he could figure out what we were doing. Not only that, I mean, he just back analyzed what we were doing and figured it out. Not only that, I had our brokers tell me that the pit traders had our stops, which means somebody was leaking information. Some clerk, some broker, some telephone operator was telling the guys in the pits, hey, Commodity Investment Services stops are right there. You hit that stop and they're going to sell 100 contracts. And so if you're short and drive it through that stop, nice day for you. Okay? So, so the markets adapt, and you have to adapt. Now, the nice thing, a mathematical statistical system, an unnatural system, is not adaptive. It's it's a machine. It grinds away until your capital disappears, or until you have enough sense to take your money off the table. Okay. You do something, market does something. You do something, the market does something, and that is the natural process. The nice thing about this little book, which was written in 1948, is that this is not a defeatable. Original edition of Edwards and McGee. The market can't adapt. I mean, this is a naturally adaptive system, a naturally adaptive method. Okay. I mean, there will be modest or moderate changes from time to time in the in charting, okay, and in chart recognition. For example, since everybody knows about charts now, whenever you have a record, range like this, the mischief makers will attempt to drive the bottom line so as to chase out technical analysts and charters. Okay, charters. So what happens is you get a little more ragged pattern. Okay, maybe 30 to 40 years ago you could draw perfect lines and they all, you know, you got perfect touches on it. Now it's, you know, now it'll come down. So what I do and what I've taught is that a rigorous chart analysis are, you know, taking every point on a chart and being certain that you don't have any outliers or any penetrations of it is a little old-fashioned. Now, in fact, what I teach is I call it a pragmatic trend line. The point of a pragmatic trend line is not to try to touch every point that occurs in a trend or in a rectangle or sideways trend, but to make the data make sense, to make it to encompass the majority of the data. And the truth is, you don't have to have a 100% rigorous trend line for it to be effective. Okay. So
you're taking out some of the price extremes, like for example, like right there.
Yeah.
You're going to eliminate that.
Yeah.
Candle wick. Could that be an example?
Well, let's see. Here's the diamonds, which of course is the same thing as the chart you just looked at. Right here. Okay, right here. I mean an anally oriented analyst would put his line through this and this and this, and you might have done that when this point occurred, but I think I put this line in after it. Okay, I mean I got this point and this point. You can see this. Okay, this is below the line. So you can find analysts who insist that you touch all those points and that you not draw lines that don't encompass all the data, and I believe this is much more pragmatic. You look at this. In other words, this is certainly a valid point. But when you get this and this and this and this, even though some of them are a little outside the line, look at what it tells you.
Well, it illustrates the point you made earlier that there's traders out there that know where the trend line there is at, and they've got them.
Yeah. Yeah. In this case, let's say here you put this pragmatic trend line on this thing, and it comes up here, and bang, it gets penetrated on this. You know, if you're trading, okay, if you're trading, you're on a fairly short-term time frame, and bang, you're out on this day. And number one, you broke this line out here, and you broke it on, you know, horrendous volume and price movement. So one of the things that I do in my trading, I talk about if you're going to trade, if you're going to be a trader, is you have systems or methods that take you out of the market on a hair trigger stop. So, a hair trigger stop, this is an illustration of a hair trigger stop. In other words, ordinarily you'd be sitting there chortling and and counting your shekels, and on this day you say, oops, oops, they're here to get some back. In fact, you might even go short, okay, if you're a trader. So, now let me show you the difference between that and what an investor is doing. The stop for the investor was down here, where the arrow is. Okay, I'll tell you exactly. We'll learn how that stop was calculated. But you can see that although this was a pretty severe break, the most severe break in months and months and months, it didn't catch the stop. So an investor is still long. Okay, now, what's the principle there? The principle is that waves go up and waves go down, and you don't want to be dislodged from your position by a down wave. So you get an up wave, you get a down wave, well, your stop should be down here. Okay? Unless, if it has really changed, if the trend has really changed, then it will take you out. But if it's just mischief makers and market makers and specialists and locals and hedge funds and scalpers that are creating this, it's unlikely that they will create a wave, a down wave, long enough to take you out of a prudently calculated stop. What's the name of the guy, Bruce, the big currency trader who, the first, I think he's the first article in Jack Swagger's Market Wizards, and that's a recommendation of books, Market Wizards and New Market Wizards. I forget his last name. Swagger asked him where he put his stops. And he said, I put my stops where they're hard to get to. Now, if you know how to calculate a stop that's hard to get to, then you won't be chased out by this. So the principle of trim flying. Now what this works out to is you can have a lot of money on the table that you're willing to give back to them. I mean, you look at the Dow, you look at the Dow, and you look at the Dow points, and you compute if you go in and if you go into the Dow chart or the Dow data, and you compute the top of the Dow wave from where it was stopped at, you'll see some pretty big numbers. You'll see some pretty big numbers. Okay? Yeah, profits...
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understood what you just said.
Let me
illustrate.
Okay, so... in the Dow or in any trend following system, in the Dow or any trend following system, you have a wave, okay, let's say the Dow is long, okay, so it goes up, and then there's a down wave, and then there's an up wave, and then there's a down wave, and then there's an up wave, and then there's a down wave that changes the trend. Okay? Well, the Dow stop was set somewhere around here. Okay, if you want me to discuss, you know, exactly how the Dow operates sometime, we'll do that. But let's say right now the Dow had a stop here, so, or maybe here. So that means that from here to here was your theoretical risk, which became a real risk. Okay? So you take this number and you can see how much, I call it operational risk. You can see how much the Dow's, and all long-term trend following systems do that. Okay? They all do that because they all trail stops back there. They all trail stops back there so that as the market expands, you got more and more money at risk. Okay? It's profit, but it's still at risk. Because risk is determined, and modern portfolio theory won't tell you this, but risk is determined in pragmatic portfolio theory by taking the market price and subtracting the stock price. It tells you exactly what your risk is. Okay? So, you can see, if you look at the Dow, if you go into the Dow, look at the Dow waves, you can compute that. That's one of my next projects, is to do that. Because then you know exactly what the risk characteristics of the system are. Nobody's ever done that for the Dow. Nobody's known, even as far as I know. I mean, when I compiled these statistics for the 8th edition, I called the grand old man, Richard Russell, and said, have you got the statistics? You've got the statistics for Dow buy and sell signals since 1955. He said, no, I'll throw them away. Well, I found another guy who had them and used his. And that gives you some idea of the rigorousness of the of Dow theory studies. And I think of the guy that Shannon is the guy I used. You know, Shannon hasn't done this stuff either. As far as I know, this is the only place it is. And why is that?
Didn't Robert Colby do one of the book Encyclopedia of Trading Systems?
Well, I cited his system in the book. I don't remember. I think he did some interesting stuff on the volatility of the Dow, but I don't remember that he, you know, did these simple, stupid statistics.
I think he's probably too simplistic or something.
Well, you know, they're not curious the same way I am, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I learned back in the 70s that, you know, controlling your losses is the only way to stay alive. You know, it's the first commandment.
Well, how purist are you going to be as far as Dow theory? I mean, if you're going to be totally pure, you're going to look at the industrials, the transportations, and what was the other one? Was it the utilities, or no? It was
just the two. Well, the statistics in the book are pure.
Pure Dow theory.
Yeah. Now, I haven't really charted the transportations in the book. No real, I mean, just, it was a derivative as far as I was concerned. So I didn't bother about it. I mean, theoretically, I should have a chart in there that shows the Dow and the transportations. But, didn't I tell the joke last week about the Roman general?
You mentioned something.
Yeah.
The sacred chickens.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm not a Dalthier priest. I'm just a commenter. So, yeah. So back to, if you'll excuse my insisting, back to the question of the systems book here, where the turtles, I did one thing in my systems book that they don't do in theirs, and that's what I call the philosophy. In other words, if you, and this is something you should do for next week. For next week, you should look at the philosophy divider of the table of contents here and make some notes on these heads. Ostinante rigore is what Leonardo called obstinate rigor. Okay? And by obstinate rigor, he meant the intellectual analysis of the question, a rigorous analysis, whether it was artistic or scientific, to identify all the elements of the problem. In the process of building a system, if you don't know who you are, you're not going to build a good system. And you're probably going to go broke trying to use somebody else's system or trying to do things that you don't know what you're doing. So I have suggested that a systems notebook should contain narrative on these questions. What are the conceptual bases? Is it a trend following trading system or is it a scalping system? Is it a real time? You know, what are its aims? What are its goals? What sort of returns does it want to find? What sort of the statistical characteristics of risk and return does it want to display? What are its objectives? What kind of models are attractive to you? I mean, a trend following model, a trading model, a natural model, an unnatural model, and what theories you like? Do you like Elliott's theories? Do you like Edwards and McGee's theories? Who are the progenitors of your ideas? Is it Elliott? Is it Edwards and McGee? Is it Kaufman? Is it Maria? Is it Bambi? What your ideals are, what your attitude is, attitudes are, or what the personal considerations are. Those are questions that I think it's a good idea to contemplate, because if you don't have some of those things settled in your mind, the market charges a high tuition to find those things out. Often very high. Okay? And I'm not talking just about, well, you know, do you know how to set a stop, or do you know how to identify a trend, or do you know how to get into a market or get out of a market? I'm talking about you think you're an investor, and you think you're an investor, and you make three or four trades on this chart I gave you. You know, or you indicate that you make three or four trades. I had one guy who who looked at this and made a trade every, you know, every time he got a downwave. And it caused a great moment of enlightenment. He said, I'm over trading. So, what's the rhythm of your trading? What rhythm you want? What do you think is the ideal rhythm? All of those are questions which should be answered before, or by the end of, if not at the beginning of, this process of hammering together a system. And you remember that I said that a system is more than a set of trading rules. Okay, sometimes you can have implicit philosophical ideas and aims and objectives in a set of trading rules. If you have articulated some of these questions, you will be much better off. So, let me see if there are any questions here, and then we'll take a